Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 12:42 p.m. and that is Pacific Standard Time. And today is November 4th. It's exactly 16 years since I started working with David. I remember the day really quite well, but it was a couple of weeks later that I went to my first chart seminar. Some of the adages that David used to go through have lasted the test of time. One of them is, if the breakout has further to go now, then it will be sustained. The other is that a consistent trend is a trend in motion. Well, what that really means is that one of the best continuation patterns that we see in markets is a consistent trend. The patterns that we see evolving over the life of a cycle tend to repeat one another. That's what a consistent trend is. And once we can identify what those consistency characteristics are, well, then it makes it much easier to predict what an ending will look like. So when we think about the S&P 500, well, we're presented with some really very clear, longer-term consistency characteristics. Now, there is a lot of chop and change that goes on from one day to the next, particularly during these medium-term corrections, which are incredibly debilitating to sentiment and where people are really willing to throw in the towel. But I thought it would be interesting to simply take some time and think about, well, what are the consistency characteristics? I've put two moving averages on the chart. Well, the first is the 200-day moving average, and the second is the 1,000-day moving average. This is a weekly chart, and on Bloomberg, that translates those into 40 weeks and 200 weeks. We can see that in the period between 2000 and 2010, the 1,000-day moving average was virtually useless. And that will tell us that these long-term moving averages really don't work in ranging patterns. There will be times when it is both above and below. What we can see with the shorter dated moving average is that during the downtrend between 2000 and 2003, the market encountered resistance in the region of the MA, then support in the region of the MA between 2004 and approximately 2007, again resistance in the region of the MA in 2008, and subsequently we've had choppy action. There have been periods where the 200-day moving average has offered really very clear support, and that has been during the impressive trending phases. That was particularly true from 2012 through to the end of 2014. It was also true from July of 2016 through to really the big drawdown in November of last year. And subsequent to that, we've had support starting to come through in the region of the moving average again. We can see on the chart that since the big crash in 2008, there have been three 18-month consolidations. And on each of those occasions, people were truly fearful that the cycle was about to end, that the markets had gone up too much, that valuations had expanded, and that it was inevitable we were going to have a recession. None of the previous occasions has had an inverted yield curve. This one has. So that does make it more credible. But some of the other consistency characteristics that we have are that following the pullbacks, we've had consolidations in the region of the previous peak before we get a beautifully consistent trending and persistent trending pattern for about the next 18 months. It was exactly the same in 2015 and 16, where we had two very big stabs to the downside, but then we had a sharp rebound and subsequently a small consolidation in the region of the previous peak, and that gave way to a particularly persistent advance all the way through 2017 and a little bit of acceleration up to the peak in January of 2018. Subsequent to that, we had a pullback, a failed break up to a new all-time high, and then a much more significant decline. We can see that since 2011, these bigger declines have been finding support in the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And that does tend to be a hallmark of these very long-term bull markets. If we go back and think about the trend that we had in the stock market all the way up from the early 1980s, the 1,000-day moving average offered support following the 1987 crash, following the pullback in the 1990s, and following a ranging pattern in 1994. Following the acceleration that we saw in really starting at the beginning of 1995 all the way through to the peak in 1999, well, then it was the 200-day moving average did tend to be a more useful trend mean. It was really when the big pullback through the 1,000-day moving average had occurred that really was confirmation that the pattern was over. But the fact that we had seen resistance being found in the region of the 200-day moving average was certainly a big signal that things were changing. It was a quite similar set of circumstances back in 2007 and 8, where resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average was a clear signal that things were changing. When we then look at what we've seen previous or subsequent to that, we had a lower high in 2015. The 200-day moving average was touch and go, but the previous low was only exceeded for a couple of weeks, and then we had a very sharp pullback, or a rebound, I should say. Then we started to see support being found again. On each of the previous occasions, when these longer ranges have been resolved, we've had these big moves on the upside. Well, that's what people are betting on today. They're betting that the mini-recession that took place in 2015 and 16 gave way to a beautifully consistent and persistent advance. The bet is that that's going to be repeated today, and that this breakout will be sustained. If the breakout is sustained, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside that we're in another leg higher for this market. Now, we also have to pay some consideration to the fact that the price today is 500 points above the 1,000-day moving average. That's more than it was back in 2018. So we certainly are seeing the pace of the advance beginning to pick up. Now, people are beginning to talk about this being a mid-cycle slowdown, that the closest parallel is closer to 1995. Well, we know what happened after 1995. The market went into a parabolic advance that created bubbly characteristics. Eventually, it resulted in a crash. Well, we're not yet there. Certainly, valuations are increasing. We're at the second highest level that's been seen historically. There is no reason to expect that with interest rates where they are, with fiscal policy where it is, there is no reason to expect that we're not going to see valuations increase further. We may even see valuations expand to historically high levels. The most important point is that if we were to see the market fail to sustain the upward break, well, then it would pull back below 3,000, it would pull back below 2,900, which coincides with the 200-day moving average. It would subsequently encounter resistance in the region of the trend mean, and then it would break down below the 1,000-day moving average. That's why identifying the longer-term consistency characteristics of a major trend makes predicting what the ending will look like easier. that's what we're being presented with today, with these very clear consistency characteristics. One thing that I am reminded of is the tendency of the gold market to have ranged for 18 months at a time before breaking higher in at the period running up to the peak in 2011. There were a number of times when we had these 18-month consolidations. People then started to look at the 18-month consolidations and the incredible breakouts that we were getting subsequent to those, and they started anticipating what would happen next. That gold had been breaking out in the Septembers of odd-numbered years. It broke out in 2007, it broke out in 2009, and it also broke out of an 18-month range in 2005. Well, when by the time it got around to the period in September of 2010, people were already considering, well, it's going to break out next year anyway, so maybe I'll just have some now. And what that did was that the way that I like to think about it is that it is very similar to the Heisenberg uncertainty principle, in that the more we know about the consistency of the trend, the less likely the trend is going to persist in that manner. When people get the rhythm of the market, when it becomes common knowledge, and when we start to hear more people talking about successions of mini recessions contributing to a lengthier cycle in terms of the economic expansion, then that is another way of talking about the consistency of this expansion that we've had in the stock market over that period of time. I think this is one of the most important facts that we are seeing here, because what it suggests is that the case for the market to break higher here is we're almost at the point where we can anticipate that we're going to enter the bubbly phase. We're going to enter the period of time where there is a real potential for the market to not just break higher and trend in a persistent and consistent manner, but that it could climax in an acceleration. Now, that, of course, is a potential outcome. It is not the only outcome, but it is something that is not a popular view today, and we do have to give it some credibility, considering that an increasingly large number of markets are in fact breaking on the upside. When we think about what's been going on in Europe, then it has been out on the hinterland, or the periphery of investor attention, for quite a significant period. But when we look at a number of the longer term charts, well, the French market, for example, has just broken up and out of an almost 3-year range and is on the cusp of testing its peak from back in 2007. The German DAX index is one of the few in the region that was able to break up and out of its range. And that was all the way back in 2013. It did it right around the same time as the S&P 500. And right now, it is firming from the region of the trend mean. So there is obviously a short-term overbought condition, but I think there's a lot of negative news that's getting priced out of the market right now. When we look at the FTSE 250 in the UK, it's also firming from the region of the trend mean. And of course, you still have the uncertainty of the election coming up there, and the potential that there is going to be another hung parliament cannot be completely discounted. Then I think it's rather interesting that in Poland we're also seeing the market doing better. It had got all the way up to test the peak from, and it was quite an acceleration to get up to that peak in 2007, and now it is firming from the region of the trend mean. Now, when we think about what all this is suggesting, when, for example, we look at Japan, then that index has been consolidating above the 20,000 level. That was the upper side of the underlying decades-long base formation, and as long as it is holding that move, then we can consider that it is a first step above the base. That is equally true of the FTSE 100, which broke up and out of its range. And now when we think about what's going on in some of the other markets that have been going sideways for an awfully long time, well, Taiwan, for example, had been ranging since 1997 and broke upwards 20 years later in 2017 and has been putting in a range for the last 2 years and is now breaking on the upside. Well, that's very supportive of the view and that the Taiwanese market and Japan have tended to move in rather lockstep, and not least because of close ties between the two countries. But the other, I think, important point here is that we're seeing an increasingly large number of markets that are breaking on the upside. And that is also supportive of the view that we are potentially at the trough in global growth, that there is the scope that just even a hiatus in the trade war could potentially unleash waves of new buying because of there is so much cash on the sideline. The Indian market continues to improve following the tax cuts for corporations announced quite recently. There is also some evidence that when we look at some of the most pressured banks, that they are also starting to show some evidence of bottoming activity. This liquidity problem that has been outstanding in the housing finance sector looks like it's finally attracting some bargain hunters, and yes, banks' ability to raise some additional finance is certainly helping to stabilize the market there. Now, when we think about China, well, China has been laboring under the trade war. The Shenzhen B shares really do need to bounce from the lower side of the range. So far, the size of the dynamics we've seen have been less than convincing. We certainly need to see some follow-through on the upside from the move we've seen over the last couple of days. This doesn't bear much resemblance to the pattern we're being presented with the CSI 300. That index is pushing back up towards the 4,000 level, and it looks like a reasonably bullish consolidation over the course of this year. But of course, most of these companies are state-owned. The Shenzhen B shares are more private companies. What I find particularly interesting is when we think about some of the most successful internet companies in China, Tencent has just about steady in the region of the lower side of its range. It was in up in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. It definitely, though, needs to break its sequence of lower rally highs, which has been in evidence since April of this year. If it can do that, well, then we'd be looking at the potential for the wider Hong Kong market to do better as well. That's despite the fact that we've had increasing uncertainty with regard to the way that the central government is willing to deal with the protesters. The Hang Seng, though, has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs. That at least is positive and suggests that some bargain hunters are coming back into that market. If we then think about some of those that have not been doing quite so well, the Indonesian market has been pulling back over the course of the last couple of days, and there is still a sequence of lower rally highs there. Then the Australian banking sector has, or financial sector to be more correct, is now right back in the region of the trend mean. This is exactly where it needs to bounce if it's going to demonstrate support and hold the uptrend over this year so far. The just straight out ASX 300 banks index is also now, in fact, below the trend mean. It really does need to bounce rather urgently if the benefit of the doubt is to continue to be given to the upside. The Aussie dollar got right back up to test the 70 cent level, and, or I think perhaps more correctly, the region of the trend mean, and has paused broadly speaking, the dollar index has been rather steady in here today. It absolutely needed to demonstrate some support in the region of 97, and it has done. That has put some downward pressure on the gold price in here today, but not especially in a dynamic manner. We've had a more dynamic move in the platinum market. Silver was relatively unchanged, and palladium was in negative territory, but the dynamic move in platinum was the largest in the sector generally. When we look at this, though, on a longer term basis, this looks like a consolidation below 1,000, and it, I think, is more likely than not we're going to see a move on the upside. What I think is also rather interesting is that we have this nascent strength in the precious metals sector against a background where stock markets are breaking on the upside. And that's not generally what people anticipate happening. What it suggests is investors are looking for a hedge against the potential that there is going to be an inflationary outcome to this wanton fiscal stimulus that is being adopted by an increasingly large number of countries, where central banks are facilitating that with incredibly low interest rates. The fact also that US 10-year Treasury yields continue to bounce, and we're up about 6 basis points in here today. The internal dynamics of this range that are forming, the size of the moves we've seen in these rebounds off the 150 level, it does suggest that a low of near-term significance for the yield and a peak for prices is in. It's quite potentially a medium-term low. If this is in fact a medium-term low, well, then it is going to put pressure on bond investments. It's also going to put pressure on the bond proxies. McDonald's, for example, was down in a pretty dynamic manner in here today. Well, that's following on from the disappointing earnings that we had a couple of weeks ago, and then the firing of the CEO. But it has traded below the trend mean previously. Now the big question is whether it is going to bounce. It's really at the level where, if it's going to bounce, then this is where that should be happening. The rather spectacular advance that we've had on Procter & Gamble is also looking a little tired. We've had an uptick in volatility, particularly following what has been an incredible advance over the course of the last year and a half. Well, it does suggest that there is more risk now, particularly if bond yields start to rise. But we've also seen that cyclicals are starting to turn. That's particularly true of commodities, where the continuous commodity index has broken its downtrend. If we look at, for example, the FTSE 350 mining index, then it is also firming in here, and it is back now to test the region of the trend mean. But if we look at it over the course of the last 7 years, we've had this V-shaped recovery, and subsequently we've had a range below the psychological 20,000 level for the most part for nearly 2 years. A sustained move above that level would confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And then, of course, we have the technology sector, which also tends to be rather cyclical, and the semiconductors index is extending its advance in a rather dynamic manner again in here today. Well, what this is really suggesting is that we're getting a rotation. We're getting increasing interest in high growth technology. We're getting increasing interest in highly cyclical sectors. Also among the industrial sector, the Dow Jones, for example, moved to a new all-time high today. But the broader picture is that some of the companies that have been most beaten down, like GE and Kraft Heinz, are showing increasing signs of investor interest once more. So what we're, I think, getting increasing evidence of is rotation, and that's generally positive. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.